whole batch of dough.
Did you hear the good news? You don't have to run and hide. You can drop all your defenses. His arms are open wide.
This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize how compounding interest works for investing, but also how interest works when you are borrowing money or paying interest on a credit card.
Let's do the compound interest thing. Let's use tens, like either a $10 bill or $100. Tell me about that.
Okay, actually, let me grab something real quick, Rhett.
Okay. We're talking with my friend Scott Lapierre. He is a father of 10, 11th on its way, and he's the pastor of a church out in California.
I want to grab a copy of my finance book, and I want to read some of the numbers that I put in here.
Okay.
Because I think it's pretty surprising when you see how compounding interest works. Okay, so let's say—
I just wanted to add this. You said this is not a book about getting rich, right?
Does it say
that on the cover? See, I'm a marketing guy. I'm thinking your finance is God's way, and put, this is not a get-rich book.
It does say it's a biblical guide to making the best use of your money. And so I definitely want to see people do well, because really the more money we have, the more money we can give too. The more money we have, the more money we can serve the Lord. I mean, if you think of a guy who's working two or three jobs to take care of his family, he doesn't have time to serve in the church. So I like to see Christians have money so they can be generous, so they can pay off debt, so that they have more time available. I mean, the more money you have, then sometimes the more money, the more time you can have to serve.
Jesus said, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in good health as thy soul prospers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then you've got some wacky people on TV going, send me this money right now. God, I'm going to give you 10%, 10 times back. You know, and these, you know, just stay away from those people, folks. But God, this is the truth. It's the only time in Scripture, right, in Malachi, where he says, give me 10%. You are cursed with a curse. Why? Because you have robbed me, God. Bring meat in my storehouse. Give me a tenth, a tithe, a 10% off the top of your first earnings, and test me now. It's the only place he says, test me now with your first fruits and see if I'll not pour you out a blessing you cannot contain. And I'll tell you one thing. I've met a lot of billionaires and millionaires being in my business, having them on my radio show. Most of the people that are successful are givers.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yeah, well said. So let me share some of these numbers with you here, Rhett. Let's say Peter is 30 years old, and Peter invests $200 per month at 7% interest. When he turns 60, he'll have $244,000. Now, let's say Paul does the same thing, but he starts at 20 years old instead of 30 years old. So at 20 years old, he invests $200 per month, same exact investment amount, $200, same interest rate, 7%. When he turns 60, he'll have $525,000. So he'll have over twice as much money just from starting 10 years earlier, and that's because of compound interest. So it's a powerful— – so I tell young people, so every year— – One of my favorite outreaches our church has is to the local high school. We invite over all the graduating seniors. We bring them over to our church, to our fellowship hall. We serve them this very nice dinner, and then I put on a presentation for them. I give them four pieces of advice for graduating seniors. And the fourth piece
graduating
of advice is—
sinners. That's good. Slip of the tongue there, Scott.
Freudian slip there. I mean, we are all sinners when we graduate. Yeah. And so then the fourth piece of advice that I give them is a gospel presentation. But one of the third piece of advice that I give them is about understanding money, the time value of money, because the real tool to make money is not money itself, it's time. And unfortunately, most people get really serious about saving or investing when they're too old, when they've lost the most important tool they have, which is time, because the earlier you start, the more time you have for your interest to interest to compound like that. So that's why I tell people you need to really start early with these things.
Yeah.
Putting money away. But when you're young, and you don't have many bills or expenses, you know, you don't have maybe even have a wife to take care of or children, you're just blowing your money on shoes or motorcycles or vehicles or trips or skiing. And I'm not saying you can't do any of these things. I'm just saying have a budget and spend a little bit of money on those things and spend even more money on investing.
Yeah. Yep. Who's that famous guy that writes all the books? Dave something or other.
Dave Ramsey.
Yeah, and he says, "What you live like? What is it? Live now.
Live like no one else. So you can live like no one else.
Yeah, yeah.
Live like no one else. So you can live like no one else.
If you scrimp and save now and give up, it's amazing. Just like I said. Well, I said this a pastor friend of mine. You know, four little babies in the house, 6 years of age and under, and you know, just budget, and it works. And it's very freeing, too, because then when it says, well, you went out to dinner, this is what you spent. You spent what's allotted for this month for dinners out.
Yeah.
And frankly, food's better at home anyway.
Uh-huh.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to have the environment. So, okay, so now, I tell you what I'd like to do is, would you open up your book, because I don't have a copy here, would you open up your book and just read off the titles of the chapters, and then we'll go back to talking something else?
Sure. Yeah, right. Here we go.
And it's Your Finances, God's Way. I believe this is available everywhere books are sold, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Your Finances, God's Way.
I'd encourage people to look on Amazon. I think they'll find it easier on Amazon. It might not be in some bookstores because bookstores don't carry every book, but it's definitely on Amazon. So one of our most important stewardship and faithfulness, God's kindness and severity. Money is the foundation of faithfulness. The dangers of loving money. Learning from a rich fool. How to avoid being a rich fool. Give willingly. Give sacrificially. God's generosity encourages giving cheerfully. Good stewardship toward the poor. Spending problems versus an income problem. God's view of debt. Avoiding and eliminating debt. Saving the right and wrong way, retiring well, and then the greatest riches. In the last chapter about the greatest riches, that's to point out that the greatest riches are not physical, they're spiritual. The riches we have in Christ, right? Like for our sakes, Christ became poor, so we might become rich. The riches of his righteousness imputed to our accounts. And the gospel, interestingly, Rhett, it's incredibly financial. The gospel is accounting. It's about imputing, right? Imputing to your account. Double imputation is God's righteousness is imputed to our account. Our unrighteousness or sin is imputed to his account. So it's interesting that at the heart of the gospel is accounting language, right? We use words like debt, like sin debt.
Yeah.
We talk about paying off a sin debt. So yeah, the Lord, it's good to understand finances just so you understand the gospel better.
Yeah. Okay, so let's pick out one of those chapters that something jumped out at you.
Okay, well, we were kind of talking about wasting money. I mean, we can continue with that because I think that's one of the real practical chapters in the book. So I'll share what I've observed are some of the most common ways that people waste money. So first I said small purchases that add up. We talked about that. We talked about going to the coffee, going to the store, buying the extra items, eating out too much, going to the movies. The other thing that people do, it's called worthless purchases, making worthless purchases. Now, when I say that, I don't mean it's necessarily worthless, a worthless purchase completely. I mean, it's worthless to the person who buys it. So, for example, if I buy something, even if it's nice and it just sits on my shelf or sits in my garage or I never use it or I never wear it, that is a worthless purchase to me. Now, if someone else made that same purchase and they used it, or they benefited from it, it's not a worthless purchase for them. But for many of us, maybe all of us, we have lots of worthless purchases. We have those things that we bought that we never used, that we never wore, that we never did anything with. And the other thing, and this is a bit of a side conversation, is clutter. There are statistics about the stress or anxiety caused by clutter. Nobody has more stuff than Americans do. In fact, do you know one of the fastest growing industries? One of the fastest growing industries?
Storage.
Storage. That's exactly
right.
We've
had so many billionaires and multimillionaires come now. We have these huge buildings in Little Vero Beach, Florida. There's been about 7 or 8 of them built in the past 6 months. They put a moratorium on them in our county because they've realized people carry – it's, you know, when you see one of those homeless people and they have a shopping cart? And they have all these bags. They're mentally ill, but they have all these bags filled with who knows what, and they're pushing it down the highway. And I say, hey, folks, you're just like them. How many people have something in a storage unit right now? I knew somebody put it away for 15 years. They went and they looked at it. They figured out mathematically they paid all these money, you know, $40,000. And then they said, the stuff in there is not worth about $2,500.
Yep. Yeah, you're totally right. And so what happens is I say that our possessions possess us, if that makes sense. Possessions possess us. We're buying so much stuff that our possessions possess us. And here's how they possess us. When you buy something, there are lots of decisions associated with your purchases. For example, when you buy something, you have to figure out how to use it. You have to figure out when to use it. You have to figure out where to put it. You have to figure out where to put whatever it is that that item replaces. If you put it in this corner, what are you going to do with that item that was in that corner? So there's all these decisions. There's all this stress associated with every single purchase that we make. And so pretty soon our possession, you know, you bought that boat and now you're stressed out trying to make sure that you're using your boat so you don't feel like you have a worthless purchase. You bought this other vehicle. You have these extra clothes. So now you feel like you need to wear them. And so our possessions start possessing us, and then we put our stuff in storage lockers, and the average American spends $100 per month. It's a little less than 100. It's 90-something dollars per month on storage units. So they're paying for stuff that they don't see, they don't remember, they don't use, and it's so our it's a way to really be a pretty poor steward. We should just either give that stuff away, you know, and all the clutter in our house, it's harder to keep things orderly and organized and tidy when you've got all these possessions.
Emerson said, "We forge the chains that bind us." Now, if you know what forging means, ladies and gentlemen, it means you take the metal, you put it in the fire and hammer it out. We make the chains that bind us by collecting stuff. And to be, like, for instance, our large house, I had a large, beautiful home on the water. It's a dream home. But reached the age of 70 and said, you know, it's just too much.
Too much.
The pool guy, the sprinkler guy, the lawn guy. I mean, oh, my word, I'm working for everybody else. Sold it, simplified into a little townhouse. And now I can turn the key and lock it. My friend Chuck Cannon from CJ Cannon's up here in Vero Beach, Florida said, you know, why don't you do this? And he told me about the turning the key. And, you know, I do that now. And it's less is more and more is less. You just, you know. But also the clutter is important. Like, for instance, I have my man's cave. And right now it is a mess. And it's bothering me. I mean, you're thinking, oh, you're just free, and here you are, this poet writing stuff out of the mess, creating organization out of clutter, you know, this romantic idea. No, 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 no. So do you expound on that in your book about how physical clutter clutters the brain?
It causes anxiety for us. Yeah, I even quoted, there's a show, it's called Hoarders. My wife had watched a couple of the episodes, and you were kind of talking about people that are mentally ill. So there are individuals that are mentally ill associated with possessions. You know, they live in houses where the hallways and the rooms are all stocked just, and they barely have a path making their way through all these stacks of things. And it, you know, the stuff they buy, and then they just throw it on the pile and they never think about it again. And so all of that requires time to, you know, and we've got 11 kids, or we're
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Rhett Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM. Alzheimer's Treatment Centers of America's new clinic is now open in Port St. Lucie. Do you suffer from poor sleep? This can be a root cause of Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's Treatment Centers of America has tools to address sleep issues. Also, in the observational study of their protocol, 75% of patients had no further decline in their mild cognitive impairment. These are amazing results. There is now hope for loved ones suffering from cognitive decline.